Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, psychic, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio television talk show personality. She brings to the airwaves talented people from around the world who share their insights and experiences with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo, and yes, through the wonderful vehicle of your mind, I like to think that my guest that we have today, Daryl Nysnek, is going to be someone that you will want to get to know. Because of his book, The Condor Song, well, if you're a murder mystery fan like I am, if Murder, She Wrote, NCIS, any of these wonderful mystery shows, by golly, you're going to find this story a really gripping one. And we're going to find out a little bit of Daryl's background and why he decided to write this fascinating story, The Condor Song. It is a suspenseful one that's loaded with a lot of history. Daryl, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Donna. It's a pleasure to be with you today.
Now, Daryl, you had put out a book that came out during the holidays one year, Mary's Song, or Son, excuse
yes.
me. And that was just a delightful, delightful book. And this is so opposite of that genre. I mean, that was just a wonderful, loving story for the holidays. But this one must have taken you a good deal of time to put together. Daryl, what's the history behind this? You obviously love to write, but what prompted you to put together a murder mystery?
The initial impetus, Donna, was I had been working as an attorney for a number of years, and through my work with real estate developers, I learned a lot about the environmental movement, and actually became quite interested in it. My ultimate response to it is that you need compromise between the environmental people and the developers in order to get the best possible living conditions for the human animal.
Mm-hmm.
This story idea came from something I had read about the Walt Disney Company. In the 60s, they wanted to build a ski resort in the southern Sierra Nevada mountains. And it was compelling to me because Walt Disney, you know, the godfather of all family entertainment, wanted to do this, and he was prevented from doing it by the Sierra Club. So
mm-hmm.
I did my research on that, and I came up with this story concept. Walt Disney, of course, was not evil, but there are some evil people in this story.
And they're doozies.
Yes.
And I really enjoyed that. Now, let's talk about this a little bit, because
sure. In
California, the condors were almost totally destroyed. Many times, there's just such a marvelous history about this. Share that story with us.
The California condor was literally on the verge of extinction. It had gone down to maybe five or six birds, period. And there have been no live births of California condor in the wild for decades. The condor, through its captive breeding program, where the environmental groups have taken the condor and helped it breed in captivity and then released it back into the wild,
mm-hmm.
it's increased the population to about 200 birds now. And these are magnificent birds. Yes, yes. Still, however, Donna, they find it hard to survive because of human intrusion. When bullets from hunters kill animals and the condor comes to eat on the dead carcass, oftentimes the bullet will end up in the condor and the lead is deadly for the
bird. Mm-hmm. Also, too, in the past, the animals were poisoned. Farmers
and
ranchers would poison a sheep or something like this, and then whoever fed on it. And, of course, the condors are scavengers. They clean up the dead. And
that's exactly right, Donna. That's exactly right.
They just are incredible creatures, and their wingspan,
yes.
It's education, really. But even to this day, I remember something coming to my attention, probably through a television program of some kind, how so many of them had been killed by someone putting out an animal that was poisoned, and they found all of these bodies of the condors around this creature. Now, I don't know that they ever found out who did it, but that is something that is very difficult for people to comprehend, and they'll say, well, what is the value of this bird? And the truth is, this bird contributes to the ecosystem. And with we human beings, there has been this arrogance and ignorance. It's the combination of the two that they contribute to each other quite well to realize how important this is.
One thing, Donna, that as you were saying that struck me, they do clearly contribute to the ecosystem, but the majesty and the beauty of this creature, when you I have never seen it in flight, but you can only imagine a 10 to 14 foot wingspan with a body, about a 30, 35 pound body. These magnificent birds glide on the, you know, air updrafts against the mountains. When you look at them in the face, they're not really attractive, but in flight, they're magnificent. And it's just part of, you know, the magnificent creatures of our world, you know?
It's true. And there's always the challenge. How are you going to create the balance? I think when we look at the bison, when we look at the wolf, we look at so many creatures who are not going to be able to adapt, quote-unquote, to the typical human environment. I think here in the Pacific Northwest, we have mountain cats, and we had the privilege of seeing one in our next-door neighbor's yard, which was quite an experience a couple of years ago. And when we talked to the people at the wildlife group here in the state of Washington, they said, you don't know how fortunate you were to have even witnessed this, because they don't like people, and deer are their primary food. Well, we've got deer herds around here that are just unbelievable, and the animals have a 100-mile range. I didn't know the range was that big, but the likelihood of our ever seeing one of these beautiful cats again is pretty remote. However, there was that one opportunity on a very warm summer night that this beautiful animal presented itself, and we were the only ones that saw it, my husband and myself. I saw it first, and of course, my Scottish Terriers, they were letting us know that somebody was in the next-door neighbor's yard that just really didn't belong there. But seriously, I think that there's really a concern, and I speak not just to the one species, but to many species. How can we coexist without this innate attitude of destroy them? I have so many commentaries that I've listened to, but in our local area, it's like, go out and slaughter all the coyotes. Well, people don't keep their animals in a safe place at night. They hunt, and they go out. They don't have a 7-Eleven, a Safeway, an Albertsons that they can go in and pick up what they want to eat and then go home. These are creatures that have to live off of the ecosystem. And if your friendly neighborhood cat is out wandering, guess what? It may end up for brunch on a coyote's
plate. That's exactly right.
So it's interesting. We really have this education that we need to go through, and that's part of what's folded into your delightful book about the condor. I say delightful, and someone might say, Donna, didn't you say this was a murder mystery? How can this be delightful? And I guess they'd have a good point there, but there are so many aspects and points of information that you give regarding legal process, being in the courtroom, how people are extremists and the greed. And we start off in your book on the John Muir Trail. And this takes place in California's southern Sierra Nevada mountains. Have you walked that trail? Did you walk that trail before you wrote this book?
I did not, Donna. I have obviously been up in the Sierra Nevada mountains many times, camped a couple of times, but mostly in human resort areas, and just love the wonder of it. I did a lot of research on the Sierra Nevada Trail and on the Golden Staircase that I mentioned early in the book. And, you know, saw the magnificent pictures online, but a lot of the scenes that I described are from personal experience, and not specifically in the Sierras, but in other places I've been as well. So it's the way you write a book, and you know that, Donna. You have these personal experiences, and you have to bring them out to let other people see the wonder of some of the things that are happening in this world.
Oh, that's so true. I folded in an experience I had in the desert in my children's book, God's Kiss, so I know exactly what you're saying here. Now, we have a character introduced immediately in the book. His name is Buck Anderson. And this is a man that makes a phenomenal discovery, and he's murdered.
Yes.
But there is an aspect of this. He doesn't go down without a fight.
And
who is Buck Anderson based on?
Buck Anderson, and I'm sure you're waiting for this answer, Donna. You and I have not spoken about it, but John Muir. I read a lot about the history of John Muir, and Buck Anderson was intended to be a modern-day John Muir, environmentalist beyond compare. A guy. One story of John Muir that I just want to relate very quickly, if I may.
Sure.
He was up in the Sierras hiking one late fall, and a blizzard hit. He was dead. The guy, John Muir, was going to die, but he found a hot springs at the top of a mountain, somewhere near the top of a mountain, and he lay down next to that hot springs, scalding himself as he turned himself to keep from freezing. And he survived. He did have frostbite and burns in some areas, but he survived the blizzard by lying down next to that hot springs. That is a guy who knows how to survive in the wilderness. That's who Buck Anderson is. He's that type of strong character.
Well, that answered one question I had. And then you have a laddie here, Sean Michael Donovan. And Sean Michael is really, when you start reading about this dude, you just want to take him by the ears and shake him till his brain rattles. At least that's how I felt about it. I thought, oh my goodness, what is this with this guy? Sean Michael, who is he?
Okay. He is the main character, and he is an attorney. Middle-aged attorney who has unfortunately lost his way, but it was as a result of a good cause. He took an ethical stand that unethical people took advantage of and basically destroyed his career. He's now coming back years later without his job, without his family, and he's trying to get his life going again. And he's thrown into the midst of this Buck Anderson murder and the mystery that surrounds it. And that's where the real turmoil in the story is, around Sean. And I will tell you, Donna, much of Sean's experience comes from my own experience as a lawyer. You know, you hear stories about lawyers in life and how some are unscrupulous, but the truth of the matter is most lawyers are good people. Sean is a good man. Unfortunately, there are some unscrupulous lawyers, as you know from reading the book.
Oh, yes. Absolutely. Now, we have some characters. They're in a lesser position, but they are significant. One is Cameron, and the other is Derek. And in the beginning of the story, these two individuals make a phenomenal discovery. And it was prompted by curiosity. Who are these people?
They're two students from one of the University of California campuses. They have graduated, and they're diehard environmentalists. And they're up in the Sierras hiking for and camping for a period of time when they see off in the distance a speck that turns out to be a condor. On their journey, they discover something that leads them to the body, and I don't want to give too much detail away, but it leads them to the body of Buck Anderson. And they learn part of the secret that Buck has learned and that resulted in his death.
And then we find that there's a forensic pathologist. My goodness, anybody that's ever liked Quincy or CSI, I mean, this is something that is so cool. All of us are, you know, just gripped by the forensic pathologist image. And this guy was really arrogant. And he just presumed so much. And I just thought, and I won't tell what happened to him, but I'll tell you what. I didn't have too much sympathy for this dude. Anyway, Orson Hoffman is the name of this character. Have you ever been around a forensic pathologist? How did you manage to put this together?
I watching the same things that all of you did and putting a character to him different from Quincy and the others. It was very important for me and the story to have a gentleman who was lost in a backwater town and county and wanted to get to the big time of, you know, the San Francisco or Los Angeles coroner's office. And he was in a small county, and this murder was going to make him. And that's, it just struck me that this was the right guy, this kind of overweight, arrogant fop, basically.
Done. Boy. He's the attorney you just want to hate. And you did a nice job of setting him up in the book, too. Oh, I like that.
I love it.
Yes. And I'm sure that because at one time you were an attorney, a practicing attorney, and you encountered some unsavory dudes in your own profession. We all know about the attorney jokes. With
no question.
Was he a composite of a number of schmuck in the legal profession?
You know what? I would have to say, Donna, that all of the characters were composites of people that I have met, known, and thought about. And Richard Wolff, the best way to say it is that he was a composite. I didn't know any one person who had his total character, but there's no question that there were some people that I ran across who had done some things that were not obviously wrong, but ethically, morally, and societally terrible. And that's who some of the bad guys were here. You had some that were very bad and obviously bad, and you had some that were, well, kind of on the edge, in the gray area, you know, not necessarily black and white. I love to deal with characters like that. I love to kind of get into their heads and see who they really are.
Well, I think it's the type of thing that Jessica in Murder, She Wrote, or, you know, I just think that this is the type of character that you want to bring out because it's the type of character that you love to hate.
Yes.
And boy, you just really want to shred them in the, you know, you just want to have a good time with it. That's one of the things I enjoyed about your book, because the range of emotions, the range of circumstances, the factual information that you put in here, all of this creates a blend of very human experiences. And one of the components that I found very significant it reminds me of the old Perry Mason shows, is how you have to solve things. You have to get the information. How do you get it? Where do you go? And there's this sweet, sweet lady that is in here that is an innocent, and this does involve some property being developed, and she hires Sean. And Sean is at the pits. I mean, he's really down and out. He doesn't have work. But he comes alive because of this sweet woman that he had known, and this is part of the story. I'm not going to give you all of it. But because of this, it's like the depth of this character of Shawn Michaels starts to come alive. He realizes that this is part of his job. This is what he signed up for when he became an attorney. I really like that combination.
I appreciate that, Donna. That's it's an important part. A lot of times when you read stories, the characters are very one-dimensional. And I won't mention authors' names. Many are longtime bestsellers who have characters who are like Superman. They have no real human frailty. And no human emotion. I can't get there. I like characters who I believe are alive. And Sean's character here was somebody that, to be honest with you, I really liked him. I liked the struggle he went through, and I liked helping him unfold the mystery and try and come to a conclusion. It was an exciting writing experience as well. And I learned things as well, and that's the wonder of writing, frankly.
I agree. Now, let me ask you a question.
Sure.
As a writer, do you feel that there was a muse sitting at your shoulder? Because these characters, I'm sure, gradually evolved for you. For some reason, I can't see you putting every single name down on a piece of paper and having it all. Did you find that creative flow?
You are 100% right. And you know this, again, Donna, the writing process is something that it like oozes out of you. And whether it's a muse sitting at my shoulder, the intricacies of the character's mind and action, it comes out as you're living with that character. The difficulty, and I think your listeners will understand this. When you are writing a story that has two or three significant characters and you're in the minds of each of those at different times, it's very difficult to switch from one to the other. You have to kind of step away from the story for a day, 2 days, refocus on the new character who's going to be the center of the stage for the next chapter or two, and then dive in again. It's a difficult process. It's a wonderful process.
Mm-hmm. It is. It's something that when you're doing it, you surprise yourself.
Yes.
It's amazing because you go, where'd that come from?
Yeah,
and it's
exactly.
Almost as if these characters are sitting and waiting on the side saying, okay, pick me. I'm in the audition. Pick me.
That's exactly what... It's a beautiful process, and whether it's the muse, I certainly attribute it to that. Your mind is an amazing thing. We use a small portion of it, and when you really try to use a little more, dig in a little more, it comes up with some great ideas.
It's incredible. It's incredible.
Yes.
Now, I also was intrigued how you incorporated legal codes, for example, one by the California Business and Professions Code, Section 6068E, reads, it is the duty of an attorney to maintain inviolate the confidence and at every peril to himself or herself to preserve the secrets of his or her client. And you state that so strict were the California requirements relative to the statement in 1994, that even if an attorney learned a client intended to do extremely bodily harm to or even kill another person, the attorney could not warn the potential victim or do anything else that would violate the confidence of his client by revealing his or her intent.
Yes.
Wow. I mean, that was something. Now, that law has changed, has it not?
It has been modified, yes. But the significant thing there, Donna, and I appreciate that you caught that. A human being, when we as humans learn of some evil deed that's going to be done, our reaction is one of a few. I'm afraid. I'm not going to say anything because that person will hurt me. Or I'm outraged. I'm going to prevent that person from doing this. As an attorney in California, up until relatively recently, if somebody was going to hurt someone or kill someone, you could not reveal that if that was your client who told you, I'm going to go kill this person. Mm-hmm. You could not. And the reason for that is the ethical responsibility of an attorney to hold private the things that are said by a client. Otherwise, the attorney-client relationship disappears, is what the California Ethics Commission believed. Recently, that has been changing, and things like that can be revealed. But at the time that my main character went through that process, could not.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It shocks people. Yeah, it shocks people, Donna, but the truth of the matter is the attorney-client relationship is so inviolate that it's one of those things that you simply cannot reveal it. And there's merit to it. There's arguments on both sides. And oftentimes a person's moral fiber is challenged.
That's true. And the populace often, because if we don't have that kind of education, say, what's the justice in that? Why would that be honored? So you cover that in your book. That's one of the reasons that I find it such an intriguing, fascinating read. And, of course, the giant bird, the condor, plays such a significant part. Now, I know that you have a website that people can go to. They'll find out about your other publication. But finding out more about the book, The Condor Song, it is a novel that is beginning, and at the beginning grips you, and then it goes on from there. The ending, well, you're going to have to get the book to find out about it. But I like to think that with our sharing some of the characters with you and some of the points of information, you'll want to add this to your reading list. The Condor Song, novel of suspense. Daryl Nysnek, the spelling of your last name is a very unusual one. N-Y-Z like zebra, N-Y-K. And people can go to your website, marysson.com, and that's marysson.com. As we're closing out our chat today, Daryl, what thoughts would you like to leave with my audience?
Here's where I am. Well, first of all, take a look at Amazon as well. They have wonderful things written about the book. But the thing for the audience is I love writing to bring excitement and passion into people's lives and into my own lives. And I would hope that all of your listeners love the act of reading, because it brings you worlds that oftentimes you don't get to visit. And it's
absolutely
something that just
true.
Absolutely moves my soul. I love it, and I wish the same to all of your listeners.
Well, I concur. The magic of a book, the magic of story, is something that's incomparable. Reading is so very, very important. I don't care about whatever technology you use, electronic or otherwise, but to be open to learning, to be open to explore. And when you read The Condor Song, you'll recognize all of the research that Daryl had to go through. Daryl Nysnek, thank you so much for being my guest today. I wish you continued success, and when you come out with your next book, be sure and let me know. This is cool.
Thank you.
The Condor Song.
Thank you.
This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. Don't go away. We've got more good things to share with you. We'll be right back.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Amino Muscle Snack Time, the chewable nutrition that feeds your muscles. Amino acids are the building blocks of protein. When you exercise, muscle tissue naturally breaks down. This low-cal, chewable snack helps to reverse that process and won't pack on the pounds. You can chew a few tasty vanilla tablets or any one of their other flavors before or after physical exercise, right before bedtime or first thing in the morning to jumpstart your metabolism into gear for the day. Convenient to carry in a purse, backpack, or briefcase, they are a tasty snack for the person on the go. Firm, fit muscles, trim, healthy body. Sound good to you? Check out Amino Muscle Snack Time Chewable Nutrition by going to Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com. Tone up, trim up, and nourish your body to the fitness level you desire. Amino Muscle Snack Time Nutritional Tablets. Check out the information and order today. Go to Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com. Order now.
Hello and welcome back. Donna Sebo here. Telephone lines are open 888-627-6008. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. I'll be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. 888-627-6008. I have a quote by Dolly Parton. This is a woman that has managed to stay very, very successful. She's accomplished so many things. And I think she's just a real sincere person. I really like Dolly. She said, the key to staying on top is to stay on top of everything. You don't take anything for granted. Don't lose momentum. Work today as if it were the first day on the job. Stay in tune and up to date with everything and everybody and all the trends. Keep your talent and wit sharpened. And never, never count your money before you count your blessings. That's Dolly Parton. And I think her wisdom is very, very appropriate. I think too many times it's so easy to get caught up in outside things without appreciating what you've already got. And sometimes that appreciation is the recognition of the people that you love, the people around you, and the significance that they play in your life. And we all have those people that we love, and it's important to that's important that we recognize them. Now, I know we've got a caller on the line. Before I go to that caller quickly, I want to let you know about the guests that are going to be coming up. And again, the phone number is 888-627-6008. Halloween, yes, it's just around the corner. Don't you just love it? Well, we're going to be talking with Nick Redfern next week about monsters. Totally appropriate. And then Joanne DiMaggio. Her book is titled Your Soul Remembers. Well, we're going to find out how you can tap into memory. That's right. And how you can use it to gain insights about yourself and your life. Learning to Breathe is Sue Fries. This is a fascinating woman who made some discoveries about toxic chemicals and, well, it almost killed her own family. So we'll be finding out about that. And then the Alien Abduction Files on Halloween. Yes. Denise Stoner is going to be my guest, and then Better You Go Home, Scott Driscoll. We're going to be talking about his fictitious story and the history that went into the making of that. So great lineup. Let's go to our first caller for the day. Hi, welcome to the show. First name or initial, and where are you calling in from?
Hi, this is Michelle, and I'm calling in from California.
Where in California, Michelle?
Oh, I'm in San Diego.
Wonderful. Southern beautiful California. Area. Okay, Michelle, let's get down to business with you. The first thing that I'm looking at with you, Michelle, is the fact that you're pretty much on target. You feel like you're at a bit of a standstill right now, but it's a very short standstill. It is a good time for you to reorganize yourself. It is a good time for you to assess what you no longer need to be bothered with and how you want to manage your time. course, holidays are coming in so fast, it's just unbelievable. But you are really geared up to making sure that your foundation for this year is well placed, because you plan on really being a mover and a shaker for activity and change in 2014. You've done a major cleanup process in your mm-hmm. life, and I have to compliment you on this because you've been very consistent with it. And you're also wanting to really get your financial aspect of your life in a positioning where you can see seeds being planted for financial independence and watching them grow and giving yourself about a five-year period. So I compliment you because you are really putting the action where mm-hmm. you need to put it. So keep up the good work and don't get discouraged because you might look at some other people and say, oh, gee whiz, they're doing so much better job than myself. Your circumstances are unique to you. So honor and respect where you are. Realize that it's part of the process and you're not off track. You're really doing a good job. What question do you have for me today?
That's so funny because it is in regards to work. I have been like doing a lot of my own due diligence this year, just cleaning up that house work-wise and money-wise. But I guess my question would be, I feel like I need to do something career-wise, and I'm not really sure what. But do you see something happening in the next month or so?
Not really. Not before the end of the year. Let me ask you a question, dear, and I apologize for interrupting you here. But because time is limited, I wanted to be sure that we get to the root of what you're concerned with. What kind of work are you doing right now?
Well, I actually work as a writer. I do theater. And I usually have these steady jobs that kind of just continue to pay. And one of them might be over soon. And mm-hmm. so I'm just trying to figure out, well, where do I get the next one from?
Well, and that's going to go on forever because that is just a part of your environment. Let me ask you this. What is your long-term view?
To actually just be working on a regular show as a writer or a performer and just have it be stable. I want that stability now.
Well, that's fine, but you're never going to have it totally, especially in your genre. Now, what I would like you to do is really think through how you can be flexible. And let me just toss out a couple of mm-hmm. things that popped into my mind. Let's say you really enjoyed doing murder mysteries. I'll just follow the theme of my guest today. You really like to do murder mysteries, that type of thing, and you find that that's great. Well, you also might want to look at perhaps writing for some commercials. You want to have mm-hmm. more of a flexibility and an adaptability. And what I'm looking at is I'm seeing you coming into a social environment, which you haven't done very much of, but this is something mm-hmm. that's going to be evolving because your writing time, you really guard that jealously, which I think you should do because that's very important. It's so easy for time to slip by. So consistently doing that is a very good thing. But there needs to be a level of adaptability, and I'm seeing someone making a proposal to you about a writing opportunity, and the first instinct is, no, I don't even want to go there. Don't do that. I want you to say to yourself, okay, this is an opportunity. It's not the end-all of end-all, and I'm not going to be labeled unless I choose to have that label. You just use the term, I write, and that's all you need to do. And there are some professional situations that may want some of your creativity. And that is what I want you to keep in mind. I want you to be open and receptive. I don't want you to just be a garbage can for anything and everything. But I do think that you are going to be recognized as someone that has a capacity for adaptability. Don't lock yourself into a box. Is what I'm saying to you making sense? Michelle, are you still there?
Oh, yes, you went out.
Okay. Is what I said to you making sense?
Oh, yes, definitely. And I'm going to continue to do that, and I'm going to trust that financially everything's just going to flow.
Well, it's not just a matter of trust. The trust is important, but I'm seeing you developing, and you've developed this over a period of time, but you're refining it. I need to choose my words selectively. You are refining your business acumen, and this is really what's going to stand you in good stead. That is really going to serve you well. I want to thank you for your call there.
Thank you.
You're very welcome, and tell your friends about the show. We'd love to have them join us.
Oh, I will. Thank you.
This is Donna Sebo, and if you'd like to call in and chat with me like Michelle did, give me a buzz at 888-627-6008. Oh, I have this absolutely luscious recipe for stuffed animals I'm going to share with you if I have a chance today, and we've got another caller. So give me a buzz at 888-627-6008. Caller, welcome to the show. First name or initial, and where are you calling in from?
Tricia, calling in from Arizona.
Hi, Tricia. Welcome to the show. All right, Tricia, the first thing that I am getting is you are knocking down a wall. Now, the image that I got right off the bat was you're putting your fist through a section of white wall. And then once the hole is put in the white wall, then I'm seeing these cracks. And you're standing back and you're wondering, do I just do the one hit or do I go and make more of a break? And I would say the breakthrough occurs because you are repetitive. And if ever you have seen white wall, of course, every building on this planet just about has it. So it's very easy to put the action through. So it's telling me that this is a soft breakthrough, yet it has enough of a structure to it. Whatever this is relating to, and I'm assuming it's business, you need to follow up again. You need to consistently hit that whiteboard so eventually, structurally, it's just going to fall in. So there is something that you are realizing that you need to follow through with. Let's say if you were a salesperson and you'd made the one contact. All right, you have to make a second contact. You have to make a third contact. You need to make a fourth contact. And eventually, the wall will be completely gone. So it's repetition. It is consistency. It is knowing the ultimate result that is wanted. And so I think you're going to be proving something to yourself. And before you go into any negotiating environment, and this obviously is related to work, before you go into any negotiating environment, you need to be in control of your mind. And by that, I mean the day before you're going to have a meeting, or it can be 5 minutes before you have a meeting, you need to make sure that you have in place in your thinking the understanding that you're going to have a positive result with this meeting. If nothing else, having a rapport develop with someone. And anything that negative could possibly be coming in, you need to look at it, see it for what it is, and shift your mind so that your demeanor when you go into that meeting is one not of outrageous optimism, but a calm, a calm awareness that you are representing the finest and best of what you have to offer. And have that in your mental space and be prepared to listen carefully to what is said. And I really think you're going to have a significant breakthrough. But again, repetition and follow-up is going to be the key. What's your question for me, Teresa?
Well, I'm hoping to pick up another freelance position starting December 1st, and I wonder if you saw that happening. The company had suggested that I contact them on December 1st.
Well, I think that's exactly what I was looking at. Now, it may take longer to get everything signed, sealed, and delivered. But I think you need to just think about what I said previously because I think that question was already answered.
Well, This one is small potatoes. I work on bigger things, and
well, that's
for December 1st.
All right, but the key is don't try to lock in an absolute on a date. You need to be aware that you're making a breakthrough. Now, whether it is this specific one that I'm seeing or it's another one. This may be small potatoes, but don't discount small potatoes. Small potatoes can, if left in the ground long enough, grow into a bigger potato.
Well, you're right.
Okay? So don't discount. Don't minimize the value of what can be attained from this, especially with a built with a relationship. This is something you're building, a relationship here. This is important. Don't discount the small potatoes. Thanks
Thank
for your
you.
Call, Tricia. We got to take a break.
Thank you.
This is Donna Sebo. We'll be back in just a moment. Hey, you can give me a call, too, at 888-627-6008. We're going to be right back and have a pad of paper and a pen handy. Good recipe coming up.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604.
Good health is something all of us want to have. Being aware of what we eat, its nutritional value, and how to balance our physical needs with our busy schedules is always a challenge. Amino Muscle Snack Time goes a long way towards helping us meet this challenge. Amino Muscle Snack Time is a nutritional food product that is portable, tasty, and in chewable tablet form, vanilla and honey flavors, a bonus for maintaining a healthy amino acid balance for healthy muscles. Amino Muscle Snack Time can be used anytime, anywhere, first thing in the morning to kickstart your metabolism. Take 20 minutes before or after a workout to help recover and build muscle. Take mid-morning or mid-afternoon to help curb cravings for unhealthy snacks. Weight loss, appetite control. Only top of the line and no genetically modified ingredients are used, no caffeine added. These chewable tablets can be ordered through Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com. Take charge and jumpstart your food program by adding Amino Muscle Snack Time by visiting Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com for more information. Order now.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. 888-627-6008 is the phone number to call into. Denise Lynn and Meadow Lynn are sisters that just have this wonderful, wonderful cookbook called The Mystic Cookbook, and I just love it. And in there is a recipe for baked apples with brandied walnuts and raisins. Well, this is the time of year to get apples, and here in the Pacific Northwest, oh my goodness, we have, I think, the best apples in the world. And especially if you go into eastern Washington, where they have so many of these fabulous apple orchards, and you get apples that have so much flavor. It's just absolutely awesome. And traditionally, the Sebo family would go up to Leavenworth every October. And, of course, I'd come back with caseloads of apples that I would put up. I'd can, maybe make into applesauce or whatever. But the apples were so deliciously flavorful that you'd eat one, it would be a whole meal. I mean, you could barely hold one in your hand. They're so large and so delicious. And that's just the way it is. It's so different from what you get in the store because so often, because they're distributing billions of apples into stores, they're kept refrigerated and gassed so that they don't ripen too fast. But, oh, this is the time of year. If you're back on the East Coast or out here in Washington, any place where you can go, where you can get to the apple orchards and the Oktoberfests of whatever type, you should really do it because it is absolutely amazing. But you can do this recipe. It's so easy and, oh, does it smell good? Be sure you buy a good amount of vanilla ice cream because this is a fabulous complement to these baked apple recipes. Now, here are the ingredients you need, and this will serve six people. And if you wanted to have it, you could do that. Six the six. Believe me, you can have these cold. They are delicious, hot or cold. 2 tablespoons of coconut oil, or you can use softened, unsalted salted butter. You need 2 tablespoons of either item. You're going to need 1/2 cup of packed brown sugar and 1/2 teaspoon of cinnamon, 1/4 teaspoon of nutmeg, and 1/4 teaspoon of salt. You're going to need 1 teaspoon of fresh lemon zest, 2 tablespoons of brandy, 1 cup of chopped walnuts, 1/2 cup of raisins, and 6 Granny Smith apples, or your favorite baking apple, whichever you like. And you want to peel it, and you want to core it. Now, this is how simple this is to fix. And again, this is the sister's recipe. Preheat oven to 350 degrees, and you want to line your baking pan with parchment paper. And in a medium bowl, you want to use a fork to cream the oil or butter with the brown sugar, cinnamon, nutmeg, and salt. Then you want to add in your lemon zest and your brandy and mix in the walnuts and your raisins. So you got all that mixed. You just put it to the side. And then you're going to peel your apples, and you can use a melon baller to, you know, get the core out of the apple. And you approach the apple from both ends until the inner core is completely removed. Then you want to fill the apples with your nut and raisin mixture. If you fill the apple both from the bottom and the top and press firmly, it won't fall out. Who knew? I didn't. It worked. Place your apples in the parchment-lined baking dish and place it on the middle rack of your oven. You're going to bake them for 1 hour to 1.5 hours, dependent on the size and the type of apple that you're using. And all you have to do to test for doneness is to pierce the apple with a fork. If it's soft, it's done. Now, you may want to baste your apples a couple of times while they're cooking. You can use a soup spoon to pick up the wonderful syrup that'll pool on the bottom of the baking dish and drizzle it over the apples. And if any raisins on the top are burned, you can remove them before serving, and then you can serve your apples with hot apples with deliciously cold vanilla ice cream. Oh, yummy. Be sure to put them in bowls, because you're going to want to take a spoon and get every single flavorful bite out of this. Now, one of the things I would say, using the parchment paper is really very, very good. If you don't want to do that, you could use foil as an insert. Also, if you didn't want to use brandy, sometimes people don't want to use an alcoholic beverage of any kind, then use some apple cider. You could do that very easily. That would give you the extra moisture you want. I think to prevent the burning of the raisins, if you've baked your apples, let's say, for 1 hour, and you're concerned, you're noticing that the raisins are starting to become overcooked on the top, just use a piece of foil. Put it on top. And or you could even use a piece of parchment paper. Put it on top of the apples so those raisins won't burn. And you also might want to just spritz it a little bit with some water just to keep the upper portion moist. It's up to you. Just some Donna tips there, whatever you want to try out. But this is a recipe I guarantee you that would become a favorite. And oh, the fragrance that fills the house is yummy. And it makes a wonderful breakfast in the morning, too. If you had leftovers, trust me, they're not going to last for very long. But for breakfast, you can have it cold. You can have it as a cold snack. It's a great recipe with a lot of flavor. My goodness, we're almost out of time here. This hour has flown by. I'm so delighted you've been able to join me here at my broadcasting table. And I invite you to join me every day, Monday through Friday, because we have such a wonderful array of guests. And be sure to check here on the website so that you find out a little bit about the guests that are coming up and the wonderful authors that have put the best of their expertise into the materials that I review and I bring to you via the airwaves. This is Donna Sebo. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Believe in yourself. And like Dolly said, count your blessings. Be aware of the fact that regardless of what circumstances are going on in your life right now, where you are can be the beginning of something great and wonderful that you had never imagined. So don't give up on your dreams. Don't give up on yourself. Be honest and true to who you are, because you know you've got a special magic, and only you can make that magic you have within yourself come alive so that it ripples out and creates even more magic with other people. This is Donna Sebo. Have an absolutely awesome weekend. I'll chat with you soon. Bye for now.
You've been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. We're delighted that you were able to join us and invite you to tell your friends and family about the program. Have a wonderful day.